Down comes the tailgate on Chris's pickup truck. We're still in the woods, but we've got a whole pile of emails, so we better get on with it, Chris.
Yes, we had.
Tricia and Barry, hello to you two. We continue to look forward to your podcast, Chris. They're always informative and so interesting. I just wondered if you still have your elderly geese. You've mentioned them before, Gozimodo and his partner, Mildred.
Yes.
So I think I saw them earlier, so you do still have them.
Oh, absolutely. Mildred's a good, 28 years old now, and I think Gozimodo is very, very close to 30 years old, and they've frequented the farmyard through thick and thin, winter, spring, summer and autumn for years. And something's not quite right between that couple. They've never had goslings of their own, so I invested in four goslings and reared them up, and Mildred caught sight of them, so she's had her maternal instincts well satisfied, and she's taken over mothering them. But I'm reminded of them every day, because in the farm loo, right in the centre of the farmyard, is a very large picture of Gozimodo and Mildred. So when you visit it's not the smallest room on the farm, but when you visit that, they're set on one of the meadows with a big wide open landscape behind them. It's a stunning photo of both of them, and it just makes you realise that sometimes birds do live extraordinarily long lives.
Swallows flying into one of the large barns at High Ash Farm, feeding their young. This is one of the big conservation success stories I know you're very proud of.
Just brings a huge delight. Four youngsters just waiting for mum and dad.
The podcast aims to bring you sights and sounds like this every week, and we're very thankful of your support. So any donations or subscriptions are very welcome indeed.
All we need is a little bit of extra help. It just keeps it going from week to week.
Monthly or one-off subscriptions, whatever the size. And the website, highashfarm.com/podcast.
6 youngsters right above our head, all with their gates wide open.
Here's one from Jill Holland, who lives like us on the East Coast.
Yes.
But hundreds of miles away, in fact, near Moray Firth in Scotland. We're renovating our cottage, and while doors and windows were open, a pair of swallows adopted our loft for nesting. They've just had their second brood fledge. And here's a photograph. 5 babies sitting on the beam, waiting to be fed. Jill says, yesterday I could hear the parents calling the young to leave the nest, and now here they are, ready to face the big scary world.
Wow, that's absolutely incredible. And we received that on the 31st of August. For up north there, you know, you're talking 600-700 miles further north than where we are. You're actually getting up near the top of Scotland, so well done. And it's unusual for the swallows to go for a second brood up there. I think the weather up there's also been quite dry, quite amicable to lots of flying insects. But normally they'll have one brood and start arriving a little bit later than our swallows down south, and leave a little bit earlier for the southern migration. So congratulations. So a big podcast pat on the back. Well done, and thank you for that.
And here's James Porter, who says, regarding partridges and their scarcity, I'm wondering where the problem actually lies. I'm sure it would be right to assume that if they could survive and flourish anywhere, it would be on your farm at High Ash, with all its wonderful cover and seeds and insects. Where we are, our small 20-acre nature reserve is surrounded with typical fen landscape. No trees, just a few tracks running through here and there. It's about a 400 block. We've been here for more than 40 years, and when we first came, they were coveys of English and French partridge everywhere. Nothing much has changed as far as the landscape is concerned, but they have all disappeared, the birds, and to date there is simply no partridge anywhere.
Now, amazing. So the email then goes on to point out that nothing much has changed, but what we have seen is a huge increase in buzzards. It's not rare to see it, the email says, for five or six circling on thermals at a time. A beautiful sight. And some time ago, though, there were a few partridges left. I did see a buzzard swoop down and take a French partridge from a covey. I think the increase in buzzard numbers is fairly general across the area. You're quite right there. And you so often see them about now. Once upon a time, you would only see them in the north of England upwards. My question is, do you think that actually they are largely responsible for the demise of the partridge and is something that we just have to accept, or just do we say, let nature do what it has to do? I really can't think of anything else that has upset the apple cart. Maybe you've got some good ideas. So I think increased predation and fewer gamekeepers out in the countryside may have a tiny impact on the numbers, but it's often nothing to do with predation. I think the main problem is change of habitat, intensification still happening of farmers just trying to scrape that living from every last square inch, and conservation is only just starting to feature out in the countryside. It's a really difficult area, but I don't think buzzards would single-handedly, although they will take game birds, they're more often very lazy hunters hunting on some small rabbits, maybe near a warren, sometimes on the ground looking for beetles and worms, all part of their diet. But at certain times of the year, they might well take a partridge. But just remember, we're still shooting them, and English partridge are a red list species that I talked about on a previous podcast, but it's a really complex issue, and I don't think there's one single factor that's caused the demise mainly of the English partridge. There's a whole raft of reasons, and just trying to fathom it all out as to try and get a straight answer is really difficult.
I suppose one of the big things is that certainly our native partridge isn't very well adapted to 21st century living.
No, probably not. And the covey forms, they're just brilliant game birds, so I can understand the shooters wanting them to keep them on the target list. But it's time to sort of review sort of predator control, perhaps. But why I'm against predator control is my county here in Norfolk last year came out top of persecution and prosecutions for wildlife, illegal wildlife control, where you take it too far past the normal list of culprits like foxes, stoats and weasels, and it then goes through to our wonderful birds of prey, which buzzards are. And so it's really complex. So there we are. Difficult to answer that one.
Got some photographs now. Jan and Dave from Norwich. I have a puzzle for you, Chris. Walking along one of our favourite walks, we noticed some strange growths on these acorns. We guess they may be galls, but have never seen any quite like this. Can you help?
Yes, yeah, so we've got them all over the farm. It's called the Nopper Gall. And we've got another question as well, almost on along the same lines.
Ah, this is Susan, who lives in Helpston, near Peterborough. I keep finding these very hard, knobbly, spiky things on the ground under my oak. And let's have a look at the photograph here. That's come along with the email. Oh, they're quite similar, aren't they?
Yes. Yep.
So I have these all the time dropping into my garden.
Yes, definitely nopper galls. And it's the sort of fruiting body almost. Well, it's caused by a species of wasp that lays its eggs in the buds of oaks. There's lots of different wasp species. Some lay their eggs on the flowers. And the scientific name is Andricus quercusalis. And it was first seen in 1956. Whether it was arrived under its own steam, but at that time we were doing lots of planting of native oak trees, and some of the oaks that were imported were called turkey oaks, a different species. They do are susceptible to nopper galls, the wasp, in other words. So whether the wasp came in with the trees is difficult to say. However, they're not affected in the same way. It doesn't seem to affect the acorns in the same way that it affects our sessile oak and penduncular oak that we grow here in this country. So that's it. So actually, it might affect acorn production, but most years, an oak, a very large mature oak tree can produce 50, 60,000 acorns in 1 year alone. So they're quite sort of fertile in their acorn production, I suppose it's good to call it. But if the acorns started to diminish in numbers because of the nopogals, things like voles and the owls that eat them, and it also would affect the amount of regenerating oaks. But just remember, over a century or more, an oak tree can produce millions, absolutely millions of acorns over a long period of time, and it only needs one or two to replace itself.
Just finally with the emails, here's Carol, who's been listening to our discussions about dossets and possets. So she's looked up the definition of a dosset. And a dosset box is a tablet organiser, broken down into small compartments to make it easier for people who have multiple tablets to make sure they take the right dose.
And that's the modern name of it. I have a very old dictionary with dosset in it, which is a small dose. In fact, it's quite close to the tablet organiser, broken down into small compartments of the dosset. But the old word, it came from a Suffolk farmer, and we were talking about sloe gin, as you do. And he said, boy, you got to make sure you only drink that as a dosset, which is a tiny portion. So it's okay. And we got an email from Tamsin in Tasmania, who called it a posset, which is a hot drink of milk and maybe some ale added to it. So they're slightly different words. So dosset is the right word to drink your sloe gin by. Tiny little thimbleful, gudgeon, no more.
Well, you know me, liberal in all things. So well done, thank you for that, and thanks for all the messages. Sorry if we didn't get yours mentioned, but they're all read, certainly. chris@highashfarm.com is the email address. And if you want to find out more about helping the podcast with any donations that you may be able to give, a one-off donation or maybe a small monthly contribution to keep the Countryside podcast going along the right lines, then you can find out more on our website, highashfarm.com/podcast. Sun's going in, Chris. I think we've got rain later.
Yeah, hopefully. It's a pound a drop, so we want to get off the farm, back in the truck, so the rain can do its job in this dry, parched woodland.